Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, B'chalutecha. This year, the Pardes Executive Learning Seminar will have two sessions, the first June 30th through July 4th, and the second at the end of the year, December 22nd through 26th, both sessions at Pardes here in Jerusalem. I urge you to check it out. It is a fantastic learning experience taught by the master teachers of the Pardes faculty. You can find out all the details. The website location is www.pardes.org.il/executive. So that's the Pardes Executive Learning Seminar. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses B'chalutecha. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha, Parshat B'chalutecha, starts what we might call the complaint narratives of Sefer Bimidbar. For the next 15 chapters or so, the nation complains about everything from lack of food and water to Moshe's leadership. They complain about going into Eretz Yisrael, and they complain about being in the desert. In this podcast, we're going to focus on one of these complaints, one in which it is actually not the nation who's complaining, but its very leadership. Miriam and Aaron complain about their brother, Moshe. The story picks up in chapter 12 of Sefer Bimidbar. Let's read some of the verses inside. Vatidaber Miriam va'Aaron b'Moshe al odot ha'isha ha'kushit asher lakach, ki isha kushit lakach. Miriam and Aaron speak about their brother regarding the Cushite woman whom he took, because he had taken a Cushite woman. Vayomru, harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber, vayishma Hashem. And they said, did God only speak to Moses? Didn't he also speak to us? And God heard what they said. Now comes a parenthetical sentence from the Tanakh. Vayisha Moshe anav ma'od, and the man Moshe was very humble, mikol ha'adam asher al pnei ha'adamah, more so than any other man on earth. The story continues with God's reaction. Vayom Hashem pit'om el Moshe v'el Haron v'el Miriam, tzulu shlashtachem el ha'ol mo'ed v'yitzu shlashtam. Hashem appears suddenly to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, telling them to go to the ol mo'ed, to the tent of meeting. He then calls out Miriam and Aaron, and he tells them, "Shimu na dvarei, listen to me. Im yeneviachem Hashem b'mar'ei lavid vada b'chalom adaber bo, lo chein avdi Moshe, b'chol beiti ne'eman hu." He says, normally, when I speak to prophets, I speak to them via some type of a vision. Not so, my servant Moshe, pe el pe daber bo, to him I speak mouth to mouth. Umar'e v'lo b'chidot, utfunat Hashem yabit. He hears me not through riddles, but rather he sees a picture of God. Madua lo yiretim l'daber ba'avdi b'Moshe. Why did you not fear to speak against my servant, Moshe? The story continues with God punishing Miriam by giving her the punishment of leprosy, tzara'at, and Moshe davening for her that she should be healed. This short little story raises tons of questions. To begin with, the content of the speech of Aaron and Miriam. We're told that they spoke about the Isha HaKushit, the Cushite woman who Moshe took. And we wonder two things. First of all, who in the world are we speaking about? Who is this Cushite woman that was taken by Moshe? Second, what exactly was the wrong that the siblings saw in the fact that Moshe took a Cushite woman? Second, a textual question. There's a doubling in the first verse. It tells us that they spoke Odot HaIsha HaKushit Asher Lakach, and then it follows and says again, Ki Isha Kushit Lakach. Twice in the span of one verse, we're told that he took a Cushite woman. What's the purpose of this repetition? Second is the continuation of their words. When they say, did Hashem speak only to Moshe? Did he not also speak about us? This verse seems to be a complaint about Moshe somehow perhaps lauding his prophecy over his siblings. They're saying, but God speaks to us just as much as he speaks to Moshe. And we wonder, what's the connection between these two complaints? What's the connection about their sentence about Moshe's prophecy and their complaint about Moshe having taken a Cushite woman? Other things to just notice in the story is this little word here, Vayomer Hashem pit'om al Moshe v'el Aaron. Suddenly, God appears to Moshe and Aaron. Many of the Farshim pick up on why in the world is the verse telling us that he suddenly appeared to them. God could have just appeared to them. Furthermore, when God actually speaks to Miriam and Aaron, he doesn't seem to make any connection back to their first complaint about the Cushite woman. He focuses instead on the uniqueness of Moshe's prophecy, making us again question the relationship between those two halves of their complaints. Was the complaint about prophecy the primary one? Or is the complaint about the Cushite woman the primary one? Or were they somehow one and the same? Let's look at a selection of commentators on our story. See how they identify this Cushite, what they think was problematic in the eyes of Miriam and Aaron in Moshe's taking this Cushite woman, and how to understand God's reaction. We'll start with Rashi. Rashi identifies the Cushite woman as Tzipora, Moshe's wife. Until now in the Torah, all we have learned about Moshe's family life is that he has a wife named Tzipora, whom he took when he was in Midian, the daughter of Yitro. We never heard of him taking any other wife, and this is probably Rashi's main motivation in identifying the Cushite as Tzipora. Since she's the only woman that we know that was married to Moshe, he suggests this must be one and the same. So let's read Rashi inside. Vatadaber Miriam v'Aaron. Hi patcha b'dibor tchila, lefichach ikdima hakatuv tchila. First thing that Rashi tells us is that the pasuk's order is, and Miriam and Aaron spoke, and he suggests that might mean that Miriam was the one who began the speech. That's why she's mentioned first. This would also perhaps explain why it's only she who seems to get punished. Aaron gets off scot-free. Perhaps the suggestion is she's the one who did the talking. Aaron was just the not-so-innocent listener. Uminayin haita yodat Miriam shepeiresh Moshe min haisha. And how did Miriam know that Moshe had separated from his wife? Rabbi Natan Omer, Miriam haita bitzad Tzipora b'sha'a she'ne'emar l'Moshe eldad u'midad mitnabim b'machaneh. Miriam had been by the side of Tzipora at the time when Moshe was told that eldad u'midad are prophesying in the camp. Kivan she'shama Tzipora, when she heard this, amra, oy l'neshoteim shel ela, im hin nizkakim l'nevuah, oy to the wives of these if they're going to become prophets, sheyu pershin minishotam, because they will separate from their wives, kederach sheperesh ba'ali mimeni, just as my husband separated from me. Umisham yada Miriam v'yigidah la'aron. From there Miriam knew, and she told Aaron. Rashi here is slightly difficult to understand, since he's assuming that you understand what he's talking about and tells the story in such a manner. His suggestion is that the Cushite woman is Tzipora. When it says that they spoke about the Cushite woman whom Moshe took, the idea is not that they were speaking about his marriage to this Cushite woman, his marriage to Tzipora, but rather what happened after that marriage, that he had then subsequently at some point separated from his wife. Miriam is speaking to Aaron not about the marriage, but about the separation of Moshe from Tzipora. He gives us a little background as to where in the world this is coming from. In the previous chapter to our story, we're told about an incident where Moshe had needed some help in guiding the people. God provides him with 70 elders who start to prophesy. At the same time that they prophesy, two other people, Eldad and Medad, prophesy in the camp. And Rashi tells us a story that's not in Tanakh itself, based in the Midrash, that Tzipora, seeing how these people had become prophets, said out of personal anguish, oh, I feel so bad for their wives, because now that they're prophets, chances are that they will separate from their wives just as Moshe separated from me. According to Rashi, Miriam overheard this and she turns and tells the story to Aaron. According to Rashi then, Miriam is not speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe in order to just simply defame him or complain about him, but actually perhaps in an effort to help Tzipora. She heard how Tzipora was upset about the fact that her husband Moshe had been separating from her, hadn't had any relations with her. And Miriam is saying this to Aaron and saying, look, did you hear what happened? Moshe is separating from his wife. And they continue. Was God only speaking to Moshe? Didn't Moshe also speak to us? V'lo pirashnu miderach eretz. And Rashi explains, but what's their point in adding this? we too are prophets. We haven't separated from sexual relations. I still have relations with my spouse. Just because you're a prophet shouldn't mean that you don't have any relations with your spouse. So again, for Rashi, the content of this complaint or this Lashon Hara of Miriam and Aaron is Miriam hearing the anguished complaint of Moshe's wife that her husband has separated for her, and Miriam wondering to Aaron, why is it that Moshe had to separate from his wife? We too are prophets. It's not something that every prophet does. I haven't separated. You haven't separated. Why did Moshe separate? Rashi then goes on to explain how he got to this identification of Tzipora as the Cushite. He says, well, if Tzipora is Tzipora, why is she called a Cushite woman? And he tells us, Haisha Cushite, Magid Shakol Modim Biyafya, Kishem Shakol Modim Bishachruto Shel Cushi. He says, she's called a Cushite because all admitted of her beauty, just like all would admit of the blackness of a Cushite. In other words, just like it's so obvious that a Cushite is black, so too is obvious to all that Tzipora was beautiful. He then adds another explanation, Cushite, bigematria yifat mar'eh. He says, if you add up the letters of Cushite, of the word Cushite, they equal the numerical values of the letters yifat mar'eh. Again, the word Cushite is a way of saying that Tzipora was beautiful. He then tries to address our question of the doubling. Why does it say Kisha Kushit Lakach right after it told us that they had been speaking about this Isha Kushit? And he says, Ma Talmud Lomar, what does this come to teach us? Yish lecha isha na'a biyafya, ve'ina na'a b'maaseh. You have a woman who's beautiful on the outside, but not on the inside. B'maaseh ha'velo biyafya, on the inside, but not on the outside. Aval zot na'e b'kol, she's beautiful in both. Rashi suggests the mentioning of the doubling of the Cushite is to teach us that she was a Cushite, which in Rashi's understanding means someone who's beautiful, both on the inside and the outside. Thus, it's mentioned twice. Okay, this, of course, is a particularly drashic way of getting from the identity of the Cushite to Tzipora, and not simple at all. But again, as we said before, and Rashi seems to be motivated not just by the simple understanding of the word Cushite, but rather by the fact that the only person that we know of that Moshe had been married to was Tzipora, and thus the two must be identical. And thus he goes this drashic route of trying to understand just why she happened to be called something else. Okay, let's move on then in Rashi's understanding to Hashem's reaction. He says, Pit'om, why does God appear suddenly? God gives them no warning. He just appears to them. And it turns out that they are impure from having had sexual relations the night before. And they're screaming there, water, water. To teach them that what Moshe did was actually a good thing that he separated from his wife. Because God actually appears to Moshe on a constant basis with no set times for speech, and thus Moshe has to be regularly pure and thus restraining himself from sexual relations. One of the nice things about Rashi's explanation is that all the verses come together. Their two complaints are not two separate complaints, but one in the same. God's reaction is also giving them an answer to what they were troubled by and not just telling them, oh, I want to go and punish you. But God is explaining to them, you're wondering why Moshe had to separate? Let me explain to you and demonstrate to you why Moshe had to separate from his wife, because Moshe's nivuah is not like your nivuah. His prophecy is intrinsically different than your prophecy. I speak to him face to face. I speak to him constantly. He has to constantly be pure. That's Rashi. And yes, it's a very nicely put together story. The only problem with it is that ha'ikar chaser min ha'sefer, the essence is missing from Tanakh. Tanakh doesn't say ha'isha ha'kushit asher peresh mimena. It doesn't say in the psukim that he separated from this Cushite woman. It says that he took a Cushite woman. It doesn't say that a Cushite is equivalent to Tzipora. It refers to her as a Cushite woman. Ibn Ezra responds to this second question, this weak link between the Cushite and Tzipora, by suggesting, Hayashar be'nai shezo ha'kushit hi Tzipora. Yes, this Cushite is Tzipora. Ki hi midyanit v'heim darim ba'ohalim. Because she is from Midian, and they dwell in tents there. Ubavur chom hashemesh ein lahem loven klal. And because of the heat of the sun, they are not white at all. V'tzipora hayta shchora v'doma l'kushit. He says, why is she called a Cushite woman? Because having dwelled in the tents of Midian out in the sun, her skin was quite dark, just like the skin of a Cushite woman. And so Ibn Ezra tries to add in a more pshat approach, a more simple reading of the word Cushite, and thus identify her with Tzipora. The big question, though, still remains. How could you say that the psukim are referring to divorcing or separating from Tzipora when the simple reading is that he married her and that was the problem? This is perhaps what leads Rashbam to a very different reading of our psukim. So let's look at him inside. Kushit, shehi mimishpachat Cham. He says, Kushit, literally someone from Kush, from the family, the descendants of Cham, who went and lived in Africa. Kisha Kushit lakach. He says, why is there a doubling of the verse? Why do we have to say that they spoke about a Cushite woman because he took a Cushite woman? Says, Kidichtiv bedivrei hayamim de Moshe Rabbeinu, shemalach be'eretz Kush arba'im shana. As we see in the Chronicles of Moshe, this is some type of a work that is not, that we no longer have, that is actually doubted as to its authenticity by some, where it says that Moshe went and reigned in the land of Kush, arba'im shana, for 40 years, v'lakach makah achat, he took one princess there, v'lo shachavima, and he never slept with her. And they didn't know when they spoke about him that he had never actually had relations. This is the simple sense. Because had they told us that they were speaking about Tzipor, and that's what the pasuk meant, why would you tell us that? Don't we know that Tzipor is a Midianite? And in addition, she's not even from Kush. She's from Midian, who's from the descendants of Keturah. Okay. Rashbam says to us, the pasuk is repeating Kisha Kushit Lakach because it's something that we didn't know. It's telling us sort of parenthetically, by the way, I know you think he only married Zippor. You should know he also married this other person. He married this Cushite woman. Rashbam then goes and tries to explain to us, well, when did that happen? And he points to a midrash, which again, as I said, is a midrash that is, its authenticity has been questioned, but it actually is found in several midrashim. Josephus even alludes to the story that at some point when Moshe had run away from Egypt en route to Midian, he didn't go directly to Midian, but rather he stopped by Cush for a certain period of time and actually rose to power there till he reigned in Cush. And along the way, he actually married a Cushite princess. If one says that Rashi's not on the text, Rashbam too seems to be somewhat missing from the text. But at the same time, even if one were to dismiss the whole story of Moshe reigning in Cush as being a midrash and not the simple sense of the text, there's actually no reason not to take the other half of Rashbam as the simple meaning of Kisha Kushit Lakach. Moshe actually, perhaps, did marry a second person. He married some person from Cush. And again, even though we haven't learned about that yet, Tanakh doesn't tell us every single detail of Moshe's personal life, and it alludes to it in that doubling, yes, by the way, you should know, because he had at some point married one. What Rashbam, of course, doesn't elaborate upon is, what's so terrible about this? And in addition, how does it relate to their second complaint? So about that second question, Rashbam answers, Vayamru harak ach b'Moshe, when they start complaining about, did God only speak to Moshe? He says, Klamar od zot amru al Moshe, b'me yacholit parleinu halo gam banu diber Hashem. He says, and in addition to this, they said about Moshe, how could the Lord owe this over us? Didn't God also speak to us? For Rashbam, Psukim Aleph and Bet are not connected. They're two different complaints. One has to do with Moshe's personal life. The other one has to do with his role as prophet. And in some ways, even though we'd say, well, why would they be saying these two things? They have nothing to do with each other. That's actually quite normal if we think about human nature. When people start talking about Lashon Hara, they say one negative thing about somebody else. They're upset about whatever they're upset about. And it leads to a whole tirade of things that you're upset about. I was upset about this, and I'm upset about that, and I'm upset about the third thing. So I don't think that one has to say that because there's no relationship, that Rashbam here is perhaps not correct. This could be a very fair reading of the text. They complain about his personal life and then starts the whole list of other things that are bothering them. But still, again, as we said, we need to clarify What if one takes this approach was so bad in Miriam and Aaron's eyes about Moshe marrying a Cushite? And for that, we'll look at one last parshan, Rav Yosef Bachor Shor. Lefi hapshat, shehayu omrim v'chi lo matza Moshe isha mibnot Yisrael shikach lo lisha shahalach lakach lo mibnot hakushim? According to Rav Yosef Bachor Shor, he says, according to the simple sense, what were they saying? What were Miriam and Aaron saying? What, Moshe couldn't have found a woman from amongst the daughters of Israel that he could take as a wife, that he had to go and take one from outside of Israel? Is it because God talks to him that he's sitting here haughty thinking, I don't have to marry someone from the daughter of Israel, that he's going to look for a daughter from afar, from a different nation? So Rav Yosef Bachor Shor goes back to connecting the two complaints. For him, the problem is a problem of intermarriage. Miriam and Aaron are complaining, how dare Moshe decide to go and intermarry? Does he think because he's a prophet that he has privileges, that he doesn't have to marry within Am Yisrael? That he could go and look outside of Am Yisrael to marry? Hello, Gambanu Diber v'nasanu Yisrael. Look, we're also prophets, but we both married people who are members of the nation. Now, of course, one would question this approach and say, well, if they're upset about Moshe having married a Cushite, well, then what else should they have been upset about? Tzipporah herself was from Midian. She, too, wasn't someone who was a member of Am Yisrael. Rav Yosef Bachor Shor answers, Va'al Tzipporah lo dibru. They didn't speak about Tzipporah. Al shelo haitam Yisrael, that she wasn't Jewish. Ki az anusu. Because then Moshe was in a state of where he was caught, meaning that he didn't have a choice. One might suggest that there's a very big difference between Moshe's actions pre-Matan Torah, before getting the Torah, and post-Matan Torah. When Moshe was on the run from Midian, from Mitzrayim, from Egypt, he went to Midian. There were no other Jews around. He didn't have a choice but to go and marry a non-Jew. In addition, we hadn't yet gotten all the laws of the Torah, so it wasn't even prohibited at that point. Post-Matan Torah, when Moshe's amidst his own people, living amongst a nation worth of women, he could go and marry a woman. So we have a bunch of different possibilities as to how to understand the complaint of Moshe, of Miriam and Aaron. According to some, there's a bit of jealousy here. According to others, there's a desire to protect Rashi's approach where he suggests that Miriam is speaking about Tzipporah. Reads Miriam there not so negative. She's speaking not just because she's upset and thinking, oh, Moshe thinks he's so much better than us, but rather because she wants to protect Tzipporah. One thing, though, I think that's important to note in trying to evaluate this as these differences of opinion is Hashem's response. And I think what's interesting is that Hashem doesn't seem to be responding to them saying, oh, how dare he marry out of the fold, and then Hashem telling them why it's okay to marry out of the fold, but rather God actually does focus on the issue of prophecy, which I think does lend support to the idea that that was a big problem in what they said, that that was their main complaint, the fact that they somehow saw that Moshe viewed himself as different because he had some level of prophecy. And so God points out to them, but it's true. He does have a different level of prophecy. And yes, that might impose upon him certain obligations and certain restrictions and perhaps also certain privileges. I heard from a colleague of mine, Baruch Feldstern, an interesting idea where he tried to connect this story to the story that came beforehand. And the story that came beforehand, as we mentioned earlier, Moshe needs help and asks God for some other people amongst the nation to be able to abet him in dealing with the problems of the nation. And in so doing, God goes and gives some prophecy to 70 elders. And two other people who are in the camp get prophecy at the same time. Onlookers, included amongst them, Yehoshua, view these two people in the camp as prophesying as being people who are somehow traitorous to Moshe. How dare they prophesy in the camp? And he even asks Moshe to go and put them in prison. Moshe's reaction, though, is, halavai that all of Am Yisrael should be prophets. Why should you think of putting them in prison? That's a wonderful thing that other people should have prophecy. When you get to our chapter, it seems that there's a complaint of Miriam and Aaron about Moshe's prophecy, and Moshe doesn't seem actually to be bothered by it because Moshe's thinking to himself, it's true, they should be prophets just like I'm a prophet. And perhaps what's interesting is that when God responds, He calls all three of them to Olamoed, not just Miriam and Aaron. And perhaps that suggests that his message is meant for all three. He tells Miriam and Aaron, guess what? You're wrong. Moshe's prophecy is not like your prophecy. But perhaps that's a message to Moshe himself. Moshe was hoping, let other people help me. Everybody else could get prophecy. And Hashem tells Moshe too, no, Moshe, your prophecy is not like everybody else's. And yes, that gives you perhaps some privileges, but also many responsibilities and obligations, and you can't get rid of them. You're inherently different than the others. So I thought that was an interesting way of connecting our story to the stories that came before it. But again, our story as a whole leaves open many questions about the relationship between Miriam and Aaron and Moshe, about the prophecy of the three, about perhaps some of the costs that come along with being a leader and what might have to do with your family life. And of course, whether or not Moshe actually did marry out of Israel and how was that seen at the time. With all those questions, I leave you and wish you a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Neema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.